Hey everyone, it's episode 407 of the 343 podcast. I sit here on Friday, December 5th in the morning. I'm seeing that the FIFA World Cup draw is set to go. And I'm reading the little headlines, little ex posts of people being upset about things being political and, you know, Donald Trump being there and complaining that it's a terrible event already. But let's push that to the side for the moment. We're going to talk about World Cup, but we're going to do it in the next episode. This episode has something much more important, in my opinion, and that is that Mauricio Pochettino had a long-form sit-down with Andrés Cantor interview, okay, where he went over key points, crucial points, things that the fan base here, the media, the players, the parents, all need to be informed of. And unfortunately, the English language media, because this was a Spanish-based interview, did not distribute this interview and did not even distribute the talking points associated with this interview. And there's very good reason for that, because Pochettino kind of undermines the culture here in the US once more. And it's not undermining in a bad way. He's trying to help, just like I'm trying to help. We're trying to communicate how it is that you become a top-tier soccer nation at every single level. So in this episode, Benny tries to help me deconstruct the 10 points or the 11 points that Pochettino made during that interview. And I also deciphered and interpreted for everybody in the English language media on X. Having said that, we're going to get into the episode right now, but I must remind you, we sponsor ourselves. We don't accept outside sponsors. How do we do that? We have products and services for coaches at 343coaching.com. It is based on the seminal, the pioneering work of Brian Kliban, who helped revolutionize American youth development here. You get to see him in action, in his team environment, in his element, with the actual players, without things being scripted in any way, shape, or form. And you get a holistic methodology from A to Z on how to get your teams on the right track. So coaches, get your butts over to 343coaching.com, sign up right away, because the longer you wait, let's face it, you're just delaying the inevitable. And I won't say what that is, but I think you can understand. Parents, the same goes for you. You are coaches off the field. You need to mentor and guide your kids in an appropriate fashion. What is an appropriate fashion? Well, we help you understand that at 343masterclass.com. And lastly, if you happen to be coaching in the 7v7 format, we have that specifically covered for you as well at 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go.
All right, Gary, let's hop right into it. Let's first start with the Pochettino interview. He recently had an interview in Spanish with Andrés Cantor. You posted on X a really good breakdown of the interview and some of the lessons that hopefully the fans and the media can take from it. I thought it'd be good if you're okay with it. We can go down one by one. I think there's a list of 10 that you put, and maybe if you want to just dig a little bit deeper. I know when you posted it, you got a lot of reactions from the fans, and it kind of blew up a little bit. So are you cool if we go down one by one on the list?
Yeah, sure. I don't know how much deeper we can go on each one, but I'll try. I think I should preface everything by saying something that's very important. Since the interview was in Spanish and it was not through one of the traditional legacy media guys, even though Andrés Cantor obviously is famous and he's been in the business for 40 years and speaks English as well. What's really interesting are two things. Number one is that the legacy of mainstream American soccer media here did not blow it up, you know, did not make a big deal out of it. They kind of ignored it. So that's really key to understand. And we can dig into potentially why that's the case. And the other thing that's really important is, since again, it's Spanish language, any translations that are out there, including their own translation when they caption the whole thing, or translations and interpretation that you see, are so off base, Benny. They're not accurate. They're not correct. I'll give you an example. Or maybe it could be, you know, when you go down the list as to how it was translated, but it's incorrect of a translation. So if you don't speak Spanish yourself and you're doing the good job of trying to tap into these interviews or press conferences in another language, just be fully aware that either you're getting just a tiny percentage of what's actually being said, really, or you're being completely misled by the translation, either unintentionally and sometimes even intentionally. So with that backdrop, Ben, I thought it was very important for me to get this interview with Pochettino and do the translation myself. Obviously, I'm a fluent Spanish speaker, descendants, you know, heritage is Argentinian, and put it out there here for the American public to read.
Yeah, I'm glad you broke it down, Gary, because me, myself, I mean, I understand a little bit of Spanish, but I think a lot of it gets lost in translation. And even going through the interview and reading the subtitles, at some points you're like, is that really what he's saying? You know? And I think I speak for a lot of the American fan base here that they don't fluently understand Spanish. So the fact that you broke it down was really helpful, dude. I think the fans will enjoy this. All right, let's get it right into it with the first one. Number one, it was a tough job reversing the broken and chronically ill ship he inherited.
Yeah. So he's referring to here plainly that he came into a situation that was really messed up, and he used precisely that terminology of coming in and riding the ship, steering this ship that was sinking, and nurse it back to health and put it on the correct course. And look, you read the subtext, and this is something that you and I have discussed on the podcast, and I've been writing X posts about for years, that tremendous damage was done over the past 6 years after Klinsmann left. Tremendous, tremendous damage. We don't have to go through the laundry list of that, what that was. But first and foremost, above everything else, possibly is the cultural component, that the players felt entitled. The intensity is not very high. The U.S. men's national team is not really viewed as much of a priority because everybody's position is, they all feel secure. And so how do you come into a situation where the culture is like that and turn it around, Benny? Very difficult to do. In the corporate world, obviously, there are such things as turnaround CEOs. They come in and to broken companies, you know, and do a U-turn, and they're very good at it. And I think Pochettino has done a phenomenal job in that respect. So that is what he was telling Andres.
Gary, is U.S. soccer, let's say the higher-ups, are they upset that he's coming out and saying all these things about how the system was, or it was a tough job to break the cycle, and or are they kind of happy that he's doing that? You know, because for your national team to come out and say, hey, the pool that I took over, or the entire system that I took over, was basically shit, you know? So what do you think their reaction is to all of this?
I think they don't really care, Benny, because the head coaches, especially here, but obviously elsewhere as well, are basically scapegoats. So the higher ups, whoever you're referring to in that regard, you know, the leadership, the bureaucrats, the executives, everybody can just point the finger at Berhalter. And, you know, the media will just point the finger at Berhalter, and the fans point the media at Berhalter. So the higher ups are always insulated in that way. The owners of MLS or whatever bureaucrat is in whatever position of power, they have their fall guys, and Berhalter's the fall guy. So they don't care if Pochettino says that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Poor Berhalter. Okay. It comes with the job, though,
don't
I guess.
Don't feel too bad for him, because since Berhalter doesn't say anything against the establishment, doesn't say anything against the bureaucrats or the owners or any of that stuff, you know, that's kind of like the bargain, right? It's like, you're a fall guy, you're a scapegoat, and in exchange for agreeing to be that person for us, you'll always have a job here. We'll pay you well, we'll pay you handsomely. And, you know, truth be told, at the end of the day, maybe in 20 years time, we'll even induct you into the Hall of Fame of soccer here. So just play the role and we're good to go.
For sure. All right, Gary, number two, the difference between quote unquote soccer and football everywhere else in the world. It's a big one.
It's huge. It's huge. We talk about it all the time here. You know, specifically he was referring to, and he was explicit about it, that here in the United States, soccer is, this sport is just about entertainment. And you hear this, you've heard this over years and years and years, the media, who are the lapdogs of MLS, repeating that narrative. Hey, whoa, why is everybody taking things so seriously? Hey, easy, this is just a game. You know, it's only a game here. It's just for entertainment. Why are you guys digging deeper into all this other stuff? And so they've built that, Ben, here in the United States, a product that is purely sold to the customer base as purely for entertainment purposes only. And everywhere else in the world, that is not it. Are people entertained everywhere else in the world? Of course they are. but there is a huge percentage of what soccer is about elsewhere in the world that has nothing to do with entertainment. It has to do with social, political, economic, and cultural expression. And yeah, man, you know, when you have those other components deeply infiltrated into the psyche of a population and the athletes themselves and the coaches themselves and the executives themselves, then it's hard to compete, you know, with that culture because they take it really seriously. And here, you know, even if you lose or the ships are burning, everybody's like, ah, it's just the game. It's fine. It's just entertainment.
So promotion, relegation, Gary, this is the root cause of it all. And if 100%. If promotion relegation existed in this country, how long would it take for the culture to shift, Gary, into something that's actually meaningful like the rest of the world?
Benny, look, you're not going to be Argentinian culture immediately, but I will tell you this much. Relative to what it is right now here in the States, it is an instantaneous change of culture relative to what it is currently in the United States, meaning everything gets that much more serious instantaneously.
I'm crossing my fingers, man. I hope that I live to see the day. I hope you live to see the day, Gary, when that happens.
Look, I'm just fighting for freedom, opportunity, and a meritocracy. I told you a million times, but I need to repeat it for the audience. I really don't care about soccer. I don't care about the ball. I don't care about the grass. I don't care about the tactics. I don't care. Like, do I know about all that shit? Fucking more than you can ever imagine. I will forget more about the tactics and the actual game itself. I will forget more of that stuff than people learn in their entire lifetimes. Than reporters who actually report on this stuff will ever know. I've forgotten more of that stuff. So do I know my shit? Of course. But what do I really care about? I care about the principles of freedom, opportunity, and a meritocracy. It just so happens that I'm expressing it through the proxy that is soccer.
Well, Gary, would you care if it was an open system and let's say you start your own club? At that point, would you start caring a little bit more about it and be heavily invested?
Of course. Of course. Of course I would care a lot more. A lot more of what we do here at 343, a lot more of the resources, capital, effort, energy, devotion would go into launching our own club and building our own club. And even if it wasn't that, maybe we would, you know, buy into another club, a local club, and be part of that, you know, and support that. Like, why the hell do I care about Orange County FC? Oh, well, Gary, you live in Orange County. Who gives a fuck? I live in Orange County and there's a soccer team in Orange County. I don't care. It has nothing to do with me. I don't own any of it. That's why it's annoying when people say, when they're talking about MLS teams or the league, they say something like, well, my club this or our league that or our club this, or there's nothing ours about it. You own nothing. You are a customer. You are a transaction. You are a line item in a ledger to them. How much money did this customer number 549, you know, how much did we make off this guy? How much that's what you are to them. Come on, man. There's nothing ours about it. Our team this, our players that. Please.
No, I was just thinking, like, it would be cool if USL teams or local clubs or franchises, like that you like to call them, allowed the fans to invest in the team and become, like, partial owners, you know? But I think we're a long way from that happening, dude.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I think technology is disrupting that sector, but let's not get off the rails because I think, you know, yeah, let's not get off the rails. There are ways and there is a trajectory in that direction, not just for soccer, but for the broader economy. But let's continue with soccer.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We'll have to bring that up in another episode because I'm curious now. Number four, U.S. soccer is not interfering in its roster decisions.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what Andres asked him. So I'm not going to, look, I'll speculate a little bit. I have to rewatch the video. I think he was asking indirectly, kind of, or leading Pochettino down the path of, hey, you know, people wonder, you know, why you're calling certain players and not others? Like what's going on? Are there dark forces behind the curtain, you know, that influence you? And he just gave a very straight answer, like, U.S. soccer doesn't influence any of my decisions or the technical staff's decisions. End of story. And why is this important? It's important because for the past year, it's no mystery that Pochettino has been calling up a whole bunch of random guys, quote unquote, random guys, and keeps calling them up, even if it's perceived that they are not performing by the fan base. And so there's all these theories out there as to, oh, he's calling these fools up because they're MLS players and MLS is basically coercing him, or he's either under contract in some sort of way to call these players and promote these players and platform these players. That whole narrative has been spinning around as a fan's attempt to explain why Pochettino's decisions are so different or radically different than what we're accustomed to here. For instance, not calling the regular guys. You know, obviously we'll get to that topic in a second. So he just put it to bed. He said, look, U.S. soccer is not influencing my decisions, period.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I don't believe Pochettino, Gary, but if it was the case where they are influencing his decisions or he's under some type of contract that, hey, you have to call this amount of guys, it's not like he would come out and say that, right? I mean, he has to kind of say that, no, they're not, right? He has to be politically correct in that, no? And again, I'm not saying I don't believe him, but he wouldn't be able to say it if he was.
It's a very good point, and it is a point that is true. You are effectively muzzled. You can't just come out and say stuff, just like we mentioned Berhalter's not coming out and saying things. And I, yours truly, have experienced a lot in this business, and I don't say a lot of things. And it doesn't have to be contractual. It's just incentive based that you just don't open your mouth. So there's a lot of truth to what you're saying, Ben. In my opinion, I think going back to last episode as to why I've always advocated for a foreigner, a top international class manager to be the coach of the U.S. men's national team, is that they don't need these people. They don't need U.S. soccer. They don't need MLS for their careers, for their whatever. So I find it hard to believe that a man like that would explicitly lie in an interview if the opposite were true.
All right. Again, I believe Pochettino, bro. I believe in this guy, but you never know. You never know what's going on behind the curtain. All right. Number five. That's a long one. The American European bass player has a posture of entitlement and we're treating call-ups as unimportant. One main reason is, unlike the earlier generations, they didn't/don't need the USMNT platform to get to Europe and crazily believe their spot on the World Cup was already secure. Nowhere else in the world is there that entitlement. And then in quotes, I've never heard of even Messi, Maradona, Ronaldo saying a year before the World Cup, nah, I'm going to rest so that I'm fresh for the World Cup next year. Even the media and fans were justifying that rationale, that culture. So kind of a call out to Pulisic, no?
Yeah, Pulisic, and I'm sure there are others that, you know, didn't hit the mainstream news that are probably, and even others who did accept call-ups and came to camps and stuff. You can see it in body language of players, like how seriously they're taking it. And a lot of these guys, and this was part of Pochettino's response also, which I didn't really capture in the breakdown. A lot of these guys would come in and they wouldn't go into tackles at 100%, or they wouldn't go into, you know, aggressively go on offense or aggressively transition to defense or any of those sorts of things because they're thinking of their club situation, right? And they want to avoid an injury at all costs. And in this instance, the cost is U.S. men's national team effort and performance. And so, yeah, he's calling all of that out, but it was quite obvious he was explicitly referring to the Pulisic situation, right? It's like, nah, I need to chill. I need to recover, you know, that way I'm good to go next summer, bro. And I have posted about this since the incident happened. What the fuck is this? In Argentina, everywhere else in the world, you are dying for that phone call to come with the manager or somebody, a representative saying, okay, you're being called up to camp. You're dying for that moment. You're dying for it. And when you show up to camp, Ben, first off, you never reject it. When you show up to camp, you go 100% injuries. Who gives a fuck about injuries? Who gives a shit about club situation? You go 100% because you're trying to get called up for the next camp. And then you're trying to get called up for the next camp and the next camp. And hopefully, you know, you do that enough times where you merit your way to a competition like the World Cup. And here, clearly that's not the case. And to boot, Benny, half of the fan base came out, you know, on Pulisic's side. Oh no, makes sense. He should rest. Like who gives a shit about the Gold Cup or this friendly against Switzerland or whatever? Yeah, like that doesn't matter. What matters is the World Cup. So why is he, it's very smart. And that's what Pochettino should be doing, is not calling this guy up. Bro, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, and Gary, I mean, think about the players that Pochettino listed. Messi, Maradona, Ronaldo. If there ever was a player that, like, okay, they know their spot is secure on the World Cup roster, and if they're going to take a camp off, okay, then maybe they'll still make it. But fuck, bro, these guys care about their national team so much, and it means everything to them, bro. And I think it starts when they're kids, right? Dreaming of putting on the jersey and representing their country. Here in the U.S., dude, I don't think kids are dreaming about putting on the USMNT jersey. I think they're dreaming about going to play overseas and, you know, putting on a Madrid or Barca jersey. But, USMNT, okay, if I make it there, it's cool, but that's not really my ultimate dream. Versus in the rest of the world, it's like, oh, fuck, dude, I would give anything to just get that call one time and represent my country in the national spotlight, bro. So it's insane to me the difference in mentalities from countries around the world versus us here, bro. Pretty soft.
Yeah, and there's all these undertows of that extend beyond soccer. So, you know, one has to start questioning or thinking about, you know, love of country and to represent your country. Yeah, you hear the American athletes here always saying, I love America, I want to represent America. This badge is everything to me. And they sing the national anthem. But when you reject a call up to represent your country, that is an action versus words that says something different. Also, key to this point that Pochettino was making, implicit in it, is the MLS guys, they're all about it. The MLS guys are like, oh, fuck yes, I am going, you know, 100%. Like, and they'll kick and scream, you know, at the club if the club, there are no clubs in MLS. If the franchise, right, here, for some reason puts up a barrier, but they'll never put up a barrier because obviously it's advertising marketing for MLS. But the MLS guys are dying for those opportunities for a couple of reasons. One, the national team is obviously a much bigger platform than your rinky dinky Seattle Sounders. And two, you know, it opens up a window to almost certainly improve your monetary economic situation in your career if you get called up to the national team and you're from MLS. So they're all about it, super hungry. And it showed, Benny. They performed like nobody expected them to perform.
Yeah, you know what I love to see, Gary, and you don't see it much on the USMNT, is other players in other countries, when their national anthem comes on and they're belting it out like it's the last song they're ever going to sing, bro. You get to see the passion in their eyes, and they're basically screaming out the lyrics, bro, you know? And you could just tell they have so much pride for their country and are proud that they're there in that moment, bro, you know? And it's curious why USMNT players don't have that much pride in their country. I mean, sure, you'll see them, like, singing the song, but it's not really as intense as other countries. And I don't know, dude, maybe you can explain this better than I can, but I'm thinking like players that live in the US have been given everything to them since the day they were born, right? And they've had a relatively easy life because they live in the United States and all the opportunities that are granted to you. But if you look at a player that comes from like an Argentina or Brazil and a low income area, or they've had to struggle their entire life, it seems like they love their country more than players do here in the US. Does that make sense at all? Or I think you it can does. Explain it better than I can.
No, I think that is part of it. I think another thing that might be influencing things is here in the United States, the professional sports leagues do the most ridiculous thing ever. Before every match, domestic match, the national anthem plays. The national anthem plays before every pro game here in the US. So when you imagine, you live that 30 times plus or 50 times, 70 times, because you're maybe even watching other sports or anything. And then you go and represent the United States, play, I don't know, Guatemala or Uruguay or something, and they're playing the U.S. national anthem before the match. Like, you're so, like, it's worn out. It's like, okay, national anthem before the match, who gives a fuck? But if you're from another country, Benny, like in Argentina, they aren't playing the Argentinian national anthem before when Rosario Central is playing Boca. You know what I mean? So when you go and represent your country, you don't hear the national anthem very often. So when you hear it, you're like, fuck yes. Like, this is amazing. It's kind of like a club player who's, imagine, who rarely plays Champions League matches. And then the Champions League match anthem comes on before, you know, it's like you fucking feel that, you know, because every week you don't hear it at all. It's a special thing. But they've killed it here in the States with pro sports. They've made the national anthem a non-special thing.
Yeah, that's true. Fuck, dude, that just means you should know the lyrics better now. Should be belting it out, bro. I don't know, dude, it's weird. I'm gonna look for some of the most intense national anthem. Because you see, like, some teams, bro, like, the entire team is belting it out. Some players are crying, bro. Here, they're just like, I don't know, dude. It's just weird to me. Fucking sad. All right. And by the way, I feel like the national anthem stuff started like post 9/11, no? Or did they do that before?
No, that shit's been going on forever, Benny. It's a great way to program the population.
All right. Okay. I was going to say something else, but let's move on. Copy the best in the world. Don't try to invent something new. That's number six that you had.
Yeah. I mean, what else can I say? Here at 343, that's exactly what we've preached since the very beginning. It's, hey, look at what the best in the world do, copy that, and go with that. If we're talking about youth soccer in particular, don't start inventing stupid shit like guided discovery this or fucking cognitive that and child development this and neurophysiology this, neuroplasticity here and over there, and design the session to do all this fucking things that have never been seen before in the history of humanity. And I see coaches, Benny, I've been in this business forever, I've seen coaches here in the States try to invent new shit. Oh, how can I develop their awareness better? Maybe if I, you know, got some flashlights and I placed, you know, cones here and there, and then had the flashlights be different colors. And this, what are you doing? What the fuck are you doing? They're trying to invent shit. I get it. We all have this creativity that wants to get out of us, and people get their rocks off that. They're trying to do good. Okay. They actually are. They're well-intentioned, but for fuck's sake, copy what has been proven to work by the greatest in the world. Copy that shit. Then once you're a master of what has been proven to work for generations and you're a master at it, you can start maybe inventing things because you understand the details so richly, Ben. You know what? I came across a really interesting clip from Marcelo Bielsa the other day, and I'd heard it before a long time ago. He's basically saying, look, I, Marcelo Bielsa, am not inventing anything. All I've done for the past 40 years is watch so much football. And when I see a problem being resolved on the field of play by a team, by a set of players, I look at that action and go through why that action was successful. And he studies that. So he came up with like several hundred individual actions where the team in possession, or not, let's just talk about possession. The team in possession solved a problem. And they didn't solve the problem because it was scripted. They solved it. All these problems of the game organically came to be over the past 100 years. So for example, if you are a solo player and you can't dribble past an opponent 1v1, A solution to that problem is have another one of your teammates nearby, and then you do a wall pass and you eliminate that player. So you can't dribble past them, but you can eliminate him with a 2v1. That is a fundamental principle of the game that nobody really invented. It organically presented itself. Does that make sense? Organically, maybe it organically presented itself 100 years ago, whenever it was. And so he's like, okay, I see that. That is a fundamental principle. Now we design the training session to get repetitions and program the players with that fundamental principle. So there's several hundred of these, and that's what Bielsa does. So he's not copying. I mean, he's not inventing things. He's copying the solutions that already exist. If any of that made sense, Benny. So when it comes to Pochettino, at the national team level here with the United States, and here in the United States, they want to invent new shit. Oh, soccer should work as a single entity, no promotion relegation. Oh, soccer, you know, if the game is tied in a league match, we should do these penalty shootouts, you know, where you dribble at the keeper 1v1 back in the day in the late 90s, early 2000s. Oh, you know, the clock should count down, you know, to zero instead of counting up. And when it hits zero, it's zero. Or, oh, we should have, you know, the inventions, just making shit up as you go along. So Pochettino encountered himself with this type of mentality here, this type of culture in the mainstream soccer media and fans and elsewhere. And he's like, guys, what the fuck? Copy the best in the world. And that's what we're going to do here.
Yeah, I'm glad you expanded on that, Gary, because I was thinking that he was referring to like the style of like how they're going to play and copy the best teams in the world. Was he referencing that at all, or more so just the way things are done in the system?
No, I think he's referencing that as well, Benny. The whole enchilada.
Yeah. Okay. Number seven, Gary. The USMNT generation from the 90s, who now have media jobs, had to fight in a very different way for what they earned. The current generation is different in that respect as well.
Yeah. Cantor brought up this point to kind of lead Pochettino into expanding. So in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s even, here domestically, players weren't making any money, really, especially the American players. Trash. You can go back in history and see, you know, an MLS player was making maybe $15,000 a year or $30,000 a year. Just, you know, terrible situation. So how do you improve your situation economically? Make a living out of this thing for real? You have to get your ass on the national team, and then you have to perform on the national team. And then clubs overseas, you know, could notice you and give you a chance. And so you die for the badge under those circumstances. And now it's very different. And so there's a whole generation of players that had to grind to become what they were, be it, you know, Alexi Lalas, Eric Winalda, Tab Ramos, Claudio Reyna, all of those guys. Fast forward to today, you've got the European-based players, and they're already making, you know, low seven figures, but seven figures nonetheless, the top guys. So McKinney might be making, I don't know, $3 million a year or something like that. Adams, similar. And even if you're not making seven figures, you're making, you know, high six figures, you know, anywhere between $500K and a million a year. And even if you're not even in that range and you're overseas, you're still making several hundred thousand bucks a year. You know, even if you're in a lower league, say like, I don't know, Belgium or a Portugal or English championship or whatever the case may be. So you're okay economically, and you don't need the U.S. men's national team to prop you up. What you really need is to perform at your club more than anything, because the opposite happens when you're in those circumstances. When you're in those circumstances, people don't care how you perform with the U.S. men's national team. They care about how you perform for AC Milan. They care about how you perform for Juve or for Lille or for Marseille, okay, or for Norwich or whatever. U.S. men's national team is second grade, second tier. It's low sample size. They don't care. So the players, if they want to continue improving their economics over there, they have to perform for their club. That's the difference he was referring to, Ben.
Do you think that's also why you saw a different type of fight from those players in the 90s? I mean, you hear it a lot in the media that those players are like absolute savages on the field, will go in for a bone-crunching tackle every time and not back down from nothing. And you just saw more of a dog mentality from those type of guys Is this the factor behind it? It's that, you know, these guys had to earn everything and weren't given anything, basically. Not to say that the current players haven't put in work and, you know, fight to be where they are right now, but back then it was a whole different type of, you have to fucking kill yourself, basically, to make it on the roster and to have any type of chance of survival in the game.
Yeah. Let's rewind the tape when you know, we launched 343 in 2009. One of the earliest articles that I wrote was centered on this term called identity. So now everybody, it's mainstream here in the States. Everybody talks about identity, but nobody even knew what I was talking about back then. No clue. They had no clue when I would use the word philosophy in the context of soccer. They had no clue when I was using the word identity in the context of soccer. Zero. It did not exist. And when it became kind of mainstream and it caught on, the media and the fan base here would be like, oh, we've never had an identity here for the U.S. men's national team. We need an identity, identity, identity. And I would say nonsense. Absolutely. We've always had an identity and now we've lost it. Our identity was exactly what you described, Benny. We were globally renowned, globally. Everybody in the world, every country in the world knew that U.S. men's national team, oh yeah, hardworking, man, like blue collar, you know, they come from the coal mines, you know, and they're farmers, you know, like that sort of imagery comes to mind where they will work, like you cannot outwork us. That was the U.S. soccer identity. And you see these old school guys that were part of that group now in the media, they're harping on this lack of work ethic, culture, identity in the current generation from the, you know, 10 years on to now. And it's for all the reasons we discussed prior, Benny. It's lost. So, I mean, we did have an identity with Berhalter. It was soft. Who was the U.S. men's national team? Ah, soft bitches. That's who we were. And Pochettino's trying to turn that around.
No, our identity was a coach that gives bounce passes to his players, bro. That's how we were known around the world, bro.
Bounce passes, vibes, Instagram, all that shit.
Yep. Damn, dude. The coal mining fucking legends, bro. It sounds, man, I wish we had that. I wish we still had that team, bro. Fucking savages, bro. Yeah, dude. Poverty makes savages, bro. Makes animals. And having money creates complacency, dude.
True.
All right, let's keep rolling here, Gary. Number 8, elsewhere it's team first, not player first. We've got to get that here in the U.S. as well. This doesn't just go for the player posture, but the media and fans as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's self-explanatory. I'm just going to focus on the media and fans for this one because, you know, they talk about players instead of talking about the team. Player this, player that, Pulisic here, McKinney there, Adams here. These guys are the regulars. These are this is the A team. This is the B team. This is the C team. It's all focused on the individuals and not the collective. And I think what many fail to understand is that to win games and to win short tournaments like the World Cup, it really does need to be team first versus the individuals. If there is any individual that is not looking out for the best interest of the team, you're not going to be successful. Full stop. I don't think Argentina is the most talented at all, you know, the past 10 years at all. But I think they exemplified team first over everything else. And I think the glue that made it all about the team was Messi. They all wanted that guy, which is an individual, I understand the irony. They all wanted that guy to win because he had never won with the national team. And so no matter if you were a starter, bencher, whatever, that was your goal. And so you're all unified. That's what I think. That's why they've been successful. They're definitely not the most talented.
How do the media and the fans create a team first environment, Gary? Because you bring up a lot, like you see in other countries and cultures that the media will often criticize the team when things aren't going well. So How can the media and the fans still criticize, but still have that kind of team first mentality? Because it's easier to understand, like, from the player perspective. It's like, hey, it's not all about me. Like, we're a team here. But for the fans and for the media, how can you explain that? Like, how can they be team first?
Well, I think what's important is whoever happens to be called to be part of the team. I mean, it all stems back to this whole notion of A, B, and C teams. Like, these players are part of this group, and those players are part of that other group. They don't see it all as one pool. Does that make sense? They don't see it all as one pool of players that are going to be selected from to form the collective team that best works, okay? Yes, they do think about that stuff, but it's different, Benny. There's a nuance there that it's hard for me to express. They view it more like, oh, why is this guy here and not that guy? Or I don't know how I explain it very well, Ben.
I see what you're getting.
It is exemplified by this narrative of regular players versus non-regular players, and then criticizing Pochettino, where he's like, they're like, what the fuck? Like, why is he experimenting with the team? That's another one. Why is this guy experimenting? Playing players here, there, playing this guy and switching out 9 starters for 9 brand new faces against Uruguay. Like, what the fuck is this all about? And they'll say that that's, oh, Gary, that's all team because I want what's best for the team. No, like you think you already know what is best for the team and you're going against the manager who is trying to form the best team. You want him to conform to your view of reality.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying, Gary. And look, at some point, Poch is going to release his World Cup roster, and we'll see how the media reacts. But I think what Pochettino is wanting is, like, the fucking ignorant questions of last time. Like, oh, you left off these roster players that are normally here. It's like, dude, once he releases the roster, it's like, these are the guys. Like, stop fucking complaining about who should have been here or, you know, who is here. Oh, it should have been this guy versus that guy. And like, no, this is the team. This is the group. Hey, we're the fans. Let's support them. Let's not fucking keep criticizing. Oh, we lose the first game. Oh, why did Pochettino call in this guy? He should have called in fucking Ajimon to be our fucking, you know what I mean? Like, no, dude, the team that he calls is his team. And as fans, let's back him up and let's support him. But we'll see if the media does that, Gary. Obviously, if things go well, it's easier for them to do that. But if things don't go well, then I think you're going to start seeing the criticism of player selection and why Pochettino brought this guy versus that guy.
Yeah, they'll just flip-flop. They just go with the results, Benny. That's all that matters. That's the extent of their analysis is the box score.
Yeah, we brought that up many times. Okay, number 9, proper culture. Players need to take all these friendly games as if they are World Cup games.
I mean, how much more clear do we have to be, Benny?
Yeah, pretty self-explanatory there. I think in the last games, we kind of seen that, right? And the players that got called in, they fucking took their opportunity and they ran with it, bro. I mean, they were battling for their lives in those games versus games that we've seen in the past. It just kind of seems like cruise control. So I think we are turning a corner on that aspect, Gary. Hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll see in the next window. All right. There are players who we, the technical staff, fell in love with and others we became disappointed in. Every player is unique and must be analyzed as such.
I mean, another self-explanatory one. Again, I think it was also in the context of why such a big pool of players, 70 plus players that are called in. It's not just an A team that's getting called in with a couple guys here or there to see who would be the substitutes. Nah, that's what he was referring to, Ben, I'm sure, because he's seen so many players. He's like, oh, I love this guy. Maybe like Luna, right? Obviously, from the get-go, it's like Pochettino fell in love with Luna, and it probably had a lot to do with the guy getting a broken nose and saying, no, coach, I want to stay in. You know, those sorts of actions is falling in love worthy and saying, no, coach, I want to take some vacation and, you know, relax a bit, you know, so I can be fresh for the World Cup. That's a disappointment for sure.
Yeah. All right. Number 11, it's silly to work for quote unquote legacy with the exception of being remembered as a good person. and good professional.
Yeah. Cantor asked him about what would you like your legacy to be? How would you like to be remembered? And Pochettino brought up a fairly recent interview with Pep Guardiola where he was kind of asked the same question. And Pep said, I don't want to be remembered. I'm not worthy of being remembered. And they both had a laugh. They're like, like if Pep is saying like legacy, who gives a shit? It doesn't matter. Like, who am I, Pochettino? He's like, you know, he's actually saying something quite humble. He's like, who am I compared to Pep Guardiola? You know, if he's saying this, like, who am I to say, oh yeah, I want to be remembered as this guy, that guy. And he's like, at the end of the day, and I think this is true, and it comes with age too, Benny, this realization of all that other stuff doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I think you just have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, I was a good person. Yeah. And at the end of the day, that's not just a good person, but when he means a good professional, to be clear, he doesn't mean a good soccer professional. He means a good professional, period. And whatever it is that you do, if you're somebody who flips burgers at a burger store, be the best fucking burger flipper on earth, you know, and take pride in your work. That's being a good professional.
100%. Last one, Gary, and I think the most important one that he said, the goal is to win the World Cup. If one doesn't think that way, what's the point?
Yeah, 100%. Like, look, deep down, does he think that? I mean, I'm sure he knows the chances. This is not a revelation. The chances are 1,000 to 1, or it's something crazy. But you can't go into a project saying, oh, okay, well, if I fall short, I fall short, you know, fuck it. No, you go into a project to try to actually climb Mount Everest and get to the absolute peak. And the chips fall where they fall, Benny. That's it. And if you don't have that posture, Ben, as a coach, as a manager, people sense it. The players will sense it. Your staff will sense it. And so they'll just copy your posture as well. You're the leader. So you have to say, we're climbing Mount Everest, motherfuckers. And so everybody's going to go along with it. And if you say, well, yeah, there's Mount Everest. I mean, let's be real. Maybe we'll make it 3/4 of the way. Then what's the work ethic and discipline and inspiration behind that? Then you're for sure not going to make the peak.
Yeah. I think back in Qatar, in 2022, when they asked, you know, Berhalter what his role was, and he's basically saying like, yeah, you know, like we want to compete. We want to make a good run, but you can kind of sense in his answer, like he's thinking there's no way that we're going to win the World Cup. Right. And so when the players hear that, it's like, oh, well, the coach doesn't expect us to win. So, you know, let's just go out and try our best. But now you have Mauricio Pochettino, world-class manager, saying like, no, motherfucker, the goal is let's go and win the World Cup. As a player, and you hear that, you want to fucking go to war for this guy now, and you want to do everything that you can. And like you said, Gary, even if he thinks like, fuck, dude, in his head, like, yeah, we're probably not going to win, and there's no way, he's still going to come out and say like, no, fuck that, we're going to go out, and that's our goal, to win the World Cup. So I think we're going to see a new generation, or not a new generation, but just a different mentality in the players, in their hunger to compete and to make a good run at the World Cup and fucking go win it, dude. USMNT, 2026 World Cup champs.
Ben, it's winner mentality versus loser mentality. It's as simple as that.
Yep. That's what you get with the world-class manager, bro.
Indeed.
All right, Gary. MLS Cup final coming up, okay, on Saturday, Inter Miami versus Vancouver. We know, Gary, it's going to be the most watched MLS Cup final in MLS history, not because the soccer is going to be good, not because, you know, the teams are amazing teams, but it's for one player, Gary. Everybody wants to watch Messi. Everybody wants to watch him win another trophy, you know. First of all, you posted recently, and it was the lineup for Inter Miami, okay? And on the lineup was all of the countries that the players play for. Not one of them was American. There was a center back who technically is American, right? And a lot of the people were quick to call you out on that. Fuck him, right? But I think he chose to play for Greece eventually. But in your tweet, Gary, you said something like, what, MLS? Or how is this good for the American player, right? Something along those lines. So if you can expand on that. And my question to you, Gary, is that even if the MLS were to open up promotion relegation, wouldn't we see this all across the league? Like, teams getting the best players, and a lot of American players are going to be left behind. So my question to you is, how will promotion relegation be good for the American player?
Sure. There's a lot to unpack there. Number one, let's go to the origin of this post that I made. And obviously you'll screenshot it, put it in the video. The media here, MLS here, has been crafting this narrative ever since the 2018-19 mass exodus of would-be homegrown players. They did not sign their homegrown contracts, if they were even offered one, and opted to go overseas. And when that happened in mass during those couple of years, the league created a variety of initiatives. One, I mean, I'll keep it simple. It was clear as day that the league mandated their franchises, you need to play the young players. Get your academy kids, throw them on the field. I don't care if they're 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 years, throw them on the field because we need to send a signal to the marketplace and to the academies and everything that, no, the best thing for you to do is sign your life away here with MLS and not go overseas. So they started playing the kids. And I also predicted that that would last maybe a handful of years, just a few years, for them to kind of change the narrative around. And once they changed the narrative around, they would go back to doing what they were doing before, which is saying, nah, we're going to import all our players, or we're going to give only the senior guys, the older guys, the experienced guys, the playing time. And these homegrowns, like, what? They're just kids. They can't play. And so Inter Miami has just become the poster child for this, because it's clear as day, if you're an academy player in Inter Miami, like, good luck. Okay, good luck. And I know people will say, oh, well, look at Benjamin Kremaski and all this. Okay, but Benjamin Kremaski, you know, stopped playing. He was all of a sudden this revelation. Okay, as a young player, even got called up to the U.S. men's national team, was starting games, and all of a sudden, all of that disappeared, wasn't playing anymore, disappeared off the map, got transferred to Italy. I don't know how he's doing in Italy. Good for the kid, and I think it is good that he went to Italy, right? But the fact of the matter is, if you're an academy player in Inter Miami now, and frankly, in many places across the league, the foreigners are going to take your position, like, just good luck breaking through. Now, to your question, promotion relegation, would this be happening in promotion relegation? Of course it will. Absolutely it will. The difference, the distinction is that there's a lot of philosophies and a lot of ideologies out there where that doesn't have to be the case across all the clubs or all the franchises in this case, but there would be clubs if it was promotion relegation. You can look at just Spain itself. Real Madrid has almost all foreigners. Barcelona has almost all local talent on the squad and playing. So you're always going to have these two yin and yang situations. Does it solve the problem? No. This is why leagues across the globe, in the interest of their national teams, in the interest of their domestic citizens, at times come up with rules as to how many foreigners you can have. And it ranges from super strict to not super strict. So in England, it's super strict, right? To get an English visa and actually play for the Premier League, very difficult. In Holland, very difficult as well, because if you're a foreigner, the clubs have to pay you a minimum of hundreds of thousands of euros per year of a salary. And that is very costly for Dutch clubs. So you get a lot of Dutch players playing on the Dutch teams. And that also is a reason why, for example, pulling this thread further, the Dutch teams themselves uniformly across the league aren't really ever contenders for the Champions League or for big international trophies, because you can only rely on your domestic players. So does promotion relegation solve this problem? No, it doesn't solve the problem. I think in the United States, however, we're the size of Europe. I think our marketplace in soccer is so enormous, Ben, that the number of clubs at the number of levels that we would have, there would be more opportunity.
Makes sense, Gary. I want to bring up too, I sent you this picture of a quote from Peter Vermes, however you say his name. former Sporting KC coach, former USMNT forward. And I was laughing when I saw it, bro, and I wanted to send it to you, but I wanted to give you a chance to address it. He says, explain to me how you would go to an owner who spent $500 million for a franchise fee and another $500 million into a stadium and another $100 million into a training facility and another $50 million on players. So let's say he's $1.2 billion in debt. And what, you're going to tell him a year from now he can be relegated to the second division? How do you do that? You can't do it. Sometimes we just have to be willing to accept who we are. Our country and the sports industry is based on playoffs. That's who we are. Loser mentality, Unger.
Well, there's a lot to it. Obviously, he's a company yes man, an MLS lifer yes man. He probably wants another job in the league. You don't go against the league and get jobs in the league or in US soccer or elsewhere. It's very difficult. So that's the primary incentive, Benny, because if that weren't the incentive, like why even open your mouth? Why comment on it? But there's just so many strings to pull on there, Ben. We could go down the path of $500 million is a clown amount of money, like nothing. It's nothing, literally nothing. Oh, what do you mean nothing, Gary? Give me $500 million. It is fucking nothing at this level of business that we're talking about, $500 million. If you're talking about owners that are worth billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, it really isn't that much money, okay? You're talking about whatever it is, 5% of their net worth. 5% of their net worth, Benny. I don't know what your net worth is. Let's just say an average American's net worth, to keep the number simple, is $100K. Okay, it's investing $5,000. Why, when I invest $5,000 in the stock market or elsewhere, in a business endeavor, anything, why is that not totally protected? Why should that be totally? That's what this guy is arguing for. 100% protection of these guys' wealth. Why? And secondly, why are you protecting billionaires? I thought all you left-wing people are against billionaires, against massive wealth accumulation, all this stuff. Why are you protecting these people? Because now all of a sudden it's in your interest because you want a job or because you want to protect your legacy. Or if you're a fan of the league or whatever, you want your entertainment, right? And you want to be able to go on X and post, make posts and ship posts and go back and forth with other people and have all this, I don't know, stimulation from it. And you don't want it to be taken away from you. Okay. So you're okay with those billionaires amassing wealth and protecting their investment. Makes a lot of sense to me. The hypocrisy is insane. I should also add, even if you do believe that $500 million is a shit ton of money, why don't you look at other industries? Look at biotechnology or pharma or big tech, anywhere at all. First and foremost, again, $500 million is peanuts. Secondly, they invest billions of dollars with a B in research and development. And if I stick with the drug analogy, they come up with a new drug, a new treatment. It costs them billions with a B, years. They also are not protected forever with their new drug. They have patent protection, but the patent expires in a certain amount of time, whether it be, I forget, anywhere between 12 to 20 years. I don't remember the patent law at this stage. But after that expiration date, everybody is allowed to make generic drugs that copy the chemical formula of the thing that you discovered and invested billions of dollars to create. So you're not permanently protected. So why do these guys who buy a soccer franchise have to be permanently protected above and beyond biotech or anywhere else in the economy? Make it make sense. Make it make sense.
Can't, bro. You can't. It's so rigged, dude. It's sad.
I should add, let me add more.
Please.
The recent owners, they're not buying a club, right? What are they doing? They're buying equity and shares in Major League Soccer. That is the entity. That is what you are investing in. You're getting a share of that business. Okay. And then you get this geographically separated office from the other geographically separated offices of MLS to operate your little team and do your little real estate plays and your little academy or whatever. And you're the operator there. That's what you're really buying into. And it's only the recent ones who paid this amount of money. Because if you go back 7 years, 10 years, 20 years, they didn't pay $500 million. They didn't pay $500 million, Benny. I want to look up Toronto FC because I keep bringing up Toronto FC because that's the one that I looked back way back in the day as to how much they paid. So I just want to make sure that we have it right here. So Toronto FC, purchase price. I think it was like 20 million or something like this. It was purchased in 2005. Okay. So 20 years ago for $10 million, Benny, 10 million.
And now is it worth it?
Yeah. Okay. It's worth like 650 million or something like that. So we can go through the whole math of what the compound annual rate of growth that is and how it beats the stock market, how it beats all other investments. And that's what this really is all about. But the point here to Vermes' quote is that not everybody paid $500 million. There's all these other guys who bought in for 10, 15, 50 million, $75 million, which is even a smaller percentage of their net worth. So the whole fucking thing's a clown show, Ben. This whole narrative of we must protect them.
I guarantee we're going to be seeing in the headlines soon Peter Vermes hired as a new head coach of this franchise. Or is now an owner, part owner of this MLS franchise. We'll see.
And to boot, Ben, it's not US soccer does not have to say, look, we're gonna have promotion relegation and MLS you're fucked. They can give MLS a choice. They can US soccer because everybody says, oh, what's the solution? You pro rel people never offer a solution. Yeah, we do. You're just not listening. Here's another solution for you. US soccer says, hey, in 5 years, so you give a runway for people to mobilize and do what it is that they want to do. In 5 years, we're going to form a Division One, Division Two, Division Three, whatever it is, with promotion, relegation, open marketplace. And, you know, if they want to use USL to do that, they can use USL to do that. And whoever wants to join, great. And whoever doesn't want to join, that's fine. And you're off to the races at that point. MLS can stay MLS if it wants. But they can create a parallel structure with promotion relegation, true promotion relegation, not USL has promotion relegation and it's all USL control. No, no, no. The Federation controls the whole structure, administrates the whole structure, and independent clubs go up and down through the independent structure. They give the whole marketplace 5 years to adjust and mobilize. Done.
We need to get you hired, Gary, into U.S. soccer's top level executives.
It really isn't that complicated. The complication comes due to politics, incentives, and corruption. That's the complication, Benny, because the solution's not complicated.
Right. All right, Gary, everybody wants to know, will you be tuning in on Saturday to the MLS Cup final?
I told you I've watched more MLS than the people who actually cover it for a living. Okay, I've been watching since 1996. And keep in mind, me watching is very different than just a fan watching or just a media journalist guy watching a match. I've been doing this since 96, Ben. Thousands of hours fucking down the tubes of my life, okay? And we're in this business, Benny. So it's kind of, if you actually operate in this business, you kind of have to pay attention, even if you don't like it. So yeah, I'll be tuning in. What's sure. also interesting, Ben, is that Messi's been playing in MLS for years now and throughout the entire season. I never tune in to watch Messi. I don't care. I don't look on my calendar like, oh, Messi plays on Saturday for Inter Miami. Okay, I'm going to block out some time to watch. It's lame. I don't. But, you know, since it's a final, since there's going to be a lot of attention surrounding it, you know, I have to be in the know. So I'll be watching.
Yeah. I just know after the game, you know, the media is going to post like, oh, wow, This is the most watched MLS game ever of all time. And, you know, we're on the rise and things are looking up, but we know it's because of one player, bro. It's not because of Inter Miami. It's not because of Vancouver. It's because of Messi, bro. That's why the numbers are going to be so high. And I'm telling you, dude, I'll send you a screenshot of the first post that I see, because I know it's coming, dude. Wow, things are on the rise for MLS. Look at how many people tuned in. Crazy, bro.
100%. Here's the real question. Is Ronaldo, not the real one, the fake one, is he going to be watching?
Probably, bro. Probably. I think he gets sad anytime Messi wins another trophy before he does.
Oh, so he's not going to be rooting for Messi to win?
No, definitely not, bro. This guy already bought a Vancouver jersey, bro.
So funny, dude. Do you see any clips of his interview with Piers Morgan, whenever it was, a few weeks back, where he's like, oh, the World Cup doesn't mean anything. It's just like 7 games.
No, I didn't see that one. I didn't see that.
No shit. Benny, oh my God, you've been living under a rock. Yeah, this guy went on an interview with Piers Morgan, and he asked them, you know, the Messi question naturally came up, and he was asked, you know, is it your dream to win the World Cup? Was it always a dream? He's like, no, it's not a dream. It's like, it's not that big of a deal. It doesn't make or break a player or their legacy or anything like that. It's just 7 games. Like, why would 7 games define a player versus, you know, a whole career's worth of matches and 1,000 goals and all this stuff? And he's like, and like, for example, Argentina, like, how many World Cups does Argentina have they won? You know, like, as if he doesn't know, right? Three. Well, see, that it's different when you play for a team that wins all the time or is a huge contender for the World Cup. Well, then you have a higher probability of winning a World Cup. You know, if you play for a no-name team, it's very different. A lot more difficult.
I say Messi's not even the best Argentinian. Maradona was better than him.
How many World Cups win Argentina before Messi? Mm. How many? I don't know. 2 times?
Yeah, maybe 2, I think.
Yeah, but it's normal. These countries, they are used to win big competitions. Brazil, if they win the World Cup, they will surprise the world. Mm. No. If the Portugal win the World Cup, which is possible, they will shock the world. Yes. But in my mind, I don't thinking in that way. Mm. Of course, you want to win. Yeah, when you compete, you want to win. Mm. I'm honest. For me, I'm not going to change the way I see the things and the way I see the football.
Do you believe you've earned the right to be considered the greatest of all time?
Of course. Oh, one of the best for many of people, yes.
But number one?
Peace, but I don't care about that anymore. Serious.
Really?
I say so many things. I say so many interviews where I think, if I say something now, the people are not going to surprise. Mm. This story speaks for itself. They have opinions. They have. Some people like more blonde. Some people like more dark. It's okay. No problem for me. But to change this story, the history of Portugal, to save Cristiano will the World Cup, will be the... No, this is not make sense for me. I win. We won 3 titles for Portugal history. Before, Portugal never won nothing. I'm glad, I'm so happy.
You would love it, Cristiano, to win the World Cup.
Yeah, but not obsession.
No, I understand what you're saying.
I swear for my kids.
But I still think that image of you, if
I
you
don't
could,
agree. I'm not agree.
Really interesting.
Yes, no, I'm not agree. Because Portugal never won World Cup. Mm. Yeah, but they can win. Yes, we're going to fight for that. But
it shouldn't define you as a player.
No. Mm. We define with 14 years old or 41 to define what? Mm.
And there's a point to that, but it's just hilarious that this guy says these things and then doesn't recognize the irony, or maybe he does, but whatever. This is all fodder for the media and stuff. That, bro, you played for Real Madrid, okay? So that's how you got all your Champions Leagues. And by the way, when you left Real Madrid, they won more Champions Leagues when you weren't there. So think about that a little bit. Your trophies are also thanks to the teams that you were on.
Yeah, no, Gary, he has to say that, you know, winning a World Cup doesn't affect a player's legacy because he knows that he's not going to win one, bro. So he's protecting his own reputation right there. But was that recently, Gary, or was that like a couple months ago? I didn't see it on Chalk. It didn't come across my any of my feeds.
Recent. Let's take a look. Piers Morgan, Cristiano Ronaldo. 3 weeks ago, yeah, man, I was pretty much on the money when it came out. You should watch it.
All right, I'll watch it today. I like Piers Morgan.
He definitely riles people up, man. For sure. I'll tell you this much. I bet you that guy is Alexi Lalas's role model.
Probably, bro. All right, brother. Good stuff. Yeah, the shirts, I'm going to call the guy today. I mean, when did we place the deposit? It was like last Friday?
Probably, yeah. It's probably been a week.
Yeah, I'm gonna call him today and just follow up.
And Benny, it wasn't a deposit. We paid the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole thing. That's what I meant. But I'll call him today and follow up.
Okay, cool. You still are confident that people will receive their packages before Christmas?
I'm confident, yeah.
All right.
Are you?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Let's see if this guy comes through.
Yeah, he will, dude. He will. All right. My phone's blowing up, so I'll see who's calling me now.
Okay, thank you, Benny. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.